Taking a moment with the busiest man in the Northwest aviation community, Pemberton & Sons Aviation and ScaniValve. Here's Addison Pemberton. And what do you do there at ScaniValve, first of all?
Well, I own the company. We manufacture wind tunnel and flight test instrumentation. I build pressure transducers that go inside wind tunnel models.
Oh.
And then I build instrumentation that goes in test cells for doing pressure surveys on turbine engines. And
like race cars and stuff, too?
Yeah, we do race cars, but mostly large aircraft engines for Pratt & Whitney and
General Electric. Oh, wow. My mom used to work for Pratt & Whitney, actually, a long time ago.
She did.
Long time ago, yeah.
Well, we we have about 90% of the race car market, but it's not a very big market. All the Formula One cars use our stuff to measure pressure surveys and aerodynamic downforce and brake cooling and all that good stuff.
Now, that's a whole other facet we got to get into another time, because I'm totally the NASCAR fan and race fan. So.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go.
We do the Freeway 500 on the radio every night.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Spokane's professionally untrained drivers on a closed course known as Spokane.
Oh, I see. Okay. Good. All right. Anyway, shoot.
Talk to us a little bit about the biplane flying. Big success this year. Were you happy with it?
Well, it was. We had 72 people showed up.
Wow.
With 60, significant antique airplanes, radial engine biplane, fabric, tube and fabric airplanes. People came from as far away as San Francisco, Montana, Seattle, about a 500 to 800 mile radius. So we were quite overwhelmed with that. Excellent weather all weekend, a little warm. Our dinner speaker was Dr. Forrest Bird, who's also a great draw.
And what's he do?
He is the developer of a number of medical products to enhance human breathing. He is responsible for the G-suit, the demand pressure regulator during World War II, and has a company in Sandpoint that manufactures breathing equipment for hospitals to this day.
Huh. Like the CPAP, you mean pressurized breathing apparatus?
Well, similar, yes, but most of his products are sold overseas. But he is the foremost expert on human respiratory in the world.
Take us back to the beginning of the biplane fly-in. When did that start?
The first one that we hosted was in 1996, and we held it as an annual event until 2004, and then we went to a biannual venue. So we do this every other July on odd years. So the next one will be 2011.
It started originally, though, as just like the open house days at Feltz Field, where they had like the balloon light up the night before, and then they'd had air shows during the day on Saturday. And
well, that's actually a different program. This thing is something that a group of the antique people at Feltz Field founded. We are actually incorporated as Northwest Biplane Fly-In Incorporated.
Oh, okay.
And we have a 501c, and we have a funding venue set up. It was the seed money came from a number of companies here in town that helped the first event get started. We work with between $5,000 and $8,000. It costs us about $5,000 a year to put that event on for a day and a half.
And then obviously it's kind of closed to the public, so it's just the aircraft owners and their friends pretty much, right?
And anyone that has a genuine interest in aircraft. We're really not there to entertain the general public.
Right.
We're really there to provide a entertainment value for aircraft owners, pilots, and aviators who want to attend the event.
And builders, too.
And builders.
Yeah. Now, if you totaled up all the man hours of work on all those aircraft, how many divorces do you think were made?
Well, at least one. In all fairness, these projects take anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 hours apiece.
Yeah.
The airplanes do the math. The families the pilots that include their families, I think, they stay together. But
not to mention the Boeing 40C, which you said had like 18,000 hours on it?
18,000 hours, my wife by my side every night.
Well, you're lucky then.
Yeah, I'm very blessed, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you just kept her busy. I remember your speech.
That's right. True story.
Back to the setup. Talk to us a little bit about working with the ATC and setting up and getting all those planes in and out safely.
Well, we talked to the tower controller here in Spokane. They're very supportive. They basically give us exclusive use of the south runway, be it 21 left or 3 right, for the weekend. We brief our pilots that they are encouraged to do touch and goes. The FISDO here in Spokane is not in favor of low pass approaches, so we keep our overhead approaches high. And the tower works with us beautifully, and they look forward to the event. We also dovetail with the FISDO. We dovetail with Feltz Field Aviation and Western Avionics, who are also very supportive.
And how much depends on weather and or current security concerns?
Well, security issues are not a problem because the pilots are usually flying in. in most years, the Spokane Airport folks give us a exclusive code for the weekend that gets people access to the airport that are needing to get to and from their aircraft. Our revenue producing resource is purely selling T-shirts, and we've learned years ago that we give the food concession to the Masons here in Spokane.
Really?
And they take all the risk and they take all the reward. If the year comes along where we get weathered out and nobody shows up, then they eat all the food. We don't have any risk there.
That's a good plan.
We can always sell T-shirts even if the weather's bad. So,
right.
T-shirts make us, you know, we usually break even or make a couple $1,000.
But this year with Larry on the back, they were gone when I got there on Saturday, the second day, third day.
Larry was a draw. We had, as you remember, Larry Tobin's accident viewed on the back. He's on the cell phone, and the bubble above his head says, "I'd like to close my flight plan." Very popular. And
that really happened.
The rest of that really happened.
That was a great shirt.
It was.
They were sold out, too. Are you going to be making more? Because they were taking orders.
We took orders for an additional 40 shirts, which will be here this week. I'll be mailing out the balance of the shirts with the C3B on the back and the Feltsfield logo on the front.
So this was not a break-even year, then? You did okay?
We made money, yeah.
Look, all right.
I think it's fair to say this was probably our best-attended event to date.
Yeah.
In the 14 years we've been doing it, I think this is the best attendance we've seen. And now, again, the weather was just perfect.
Oh, it was beautiful. It's kind of a little bit hot, but, you know.
Yeah, hot's better than rain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was there one year when it was kind of rainy, and there were just a few planes there.
That's right.
Why is it every 2 years again? I forget.
Just because we get burned out.
Ah.
It's generally what happens on even years. Most of us go back to the Midwest, to the big fly-ins, be it Blakesburg, be it Broadhead, be it Oshkosh, and it's just too much to do in one summer to do everything.
Okay, and you said there were 69 planes or
72 aircraft.
72. How many of those planes did you build?
Four of them.
And they went up to Deer Park for spot landings?
We had spot landing, bomb drop, and they had a light breakfast for us up there as well.
I missed the bomb drop. Was that the pancake breakfast this year up there?
The pancake breakfast was at Feltsfield. There were, you know, basically donuts and juices available at Deer Park with a spot landing contest on arrival. We did some formation flying for them, and then there was a bomb drop contest as we left.
What else do the pilots from out of town do while they're here? I mean, I've seen the tents and the covered aircraft, and they can't just be sleeping out in the field for 4 days, are they?
Well, they stay at hotels, or they sleep on the field. A number of them slept in my hangar. I converted my hangar to a bunk room. We had people all over the floor on air mattresses. That worked out well. And then Skeeter Carlson brought his 1917 Tommy Morris Scout to the airport, and we ran that every 2 hours.
That was the one that you started up in front of the public?
Correct.
Yeah.
The entire engine spins, if you remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't over there, but I heard you starting it up. So that's you had to really know how to do that. I guess it was a competition you had to go in there.
Well, it's a very finicky machine to get running. There is no carburetor. There's no throttle.
And the whole engine spins?
The whole engine spins. The crankshaft is stationary, correct.
Wow.
Yep.
That's something else. Do you think the proximity of the event and time being so close to Arlington helped or hurt turn up?
Well, we have to sandwich our event between Arlington and Oshkosh, and that's why the date that we pick consistently is between those two dates. I think we get people who are leaving for Oshkosh early or people that are coming after the Arlington weekend. So, you know, appreciate that summers go very fast in the Pacific Northwest. There aren't a lot of dates to pick, so that's why we do what we do.
And how does one get involved if someone wants to, I don't know, build a biplane, add a tailwheel rating, or?
Well, you hang around Felts Field,
yeah,
and you get involved with the antique airplane community, and there are a number of projects, be it home-built biplanes, which can range from $25,000 to $30,000 to exotics. Typically, a flying steerman can be purchased still today for between $80,000 and $110,000.
Those were made in mass production, and therefore parts are readily available in a...
Yeah, for the round-tail steerman, the military PT steerman, we call them, 10,000 were built. There's still 2,000 flying today, and there is a source for virtually every part or component for the PT steerman. Just like the Model A Ford for the automotive community, you can if you got a big enough credit card, you can buy any part you want for a steerman.
Wow.
Or the more exotic aircraft, you know, like the Laird that was out there this weekend, the Speedmail, the C-3B, the Travelair, that caliber of antique airplane requires the owner, the builder, does all of his own fabrication.
Yeah.
You can't pick up a catalog and buy a wing strut for a Traveler 4000 to
right.
make it.
The Fairchild, I remember the Fairchild was there, the green one with the Pegasus on the side.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yep, that's right. That came down from Sandpoints, owned by Charlie Brown.
Yeah, they're great. Memorable planes there. Some I hadn't seen before, actually.
Yeah, there was quite a turnout, yes.
What's on tap for the Boeing 40C these days? You still enjoy flying that aircraft?
Very much so. We have nearly 200 hours on the airplane to date.
Cool.
We're taking the airplane to Southern Oregon for the Oregon Aviation Historical Society's event. And then on September, mid-September, we take the airplane to Hood River to the WAM Museum. And we'll be leaving the airplane there through the winter for an airmail display there.
Pretty cool.
And then getting the airplane and campaigning it again next summer.
What's the hardest part of flying that thing? Is it still the full slip to landing you were telling us about?
Well, you know, the more you fly the airplane, the more you get used to things. It's actually a very pleasant airplane. I've been amazed at what its short field capability is. It does very well. You can operate the airplane comfortably out of a 1,200-foot airstrip, even loaded.
Really?
And as you mentioned, the most challenging part of flying the airplane is it's physically exhausting in rough air, and the visibility is very poor. You have to slip the airplane literally to within a few feet of the ground, or you will lose sight of the runway. But those skills come easy to an antique pilot, and once those skills are mastered, it's not a difficult airplane to fly.
Taxing it must be a little bit like driving a bus from the back seat on the roof.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. You've got 20 feet of airplane out ahead of you. You don't see much. You have to S-turn even on the ground.
Huh. Huh. And what's your next big project?
Well, I'm currently building a cabin Waco, which we intend to put on floats. My son, my younger son Ryan, has a 1920s Traveler 4000 project. And then we plan to help Randy Ingram, that owns Longhorn Barbecue, build a very unique airplane called a Waco Taper Wing. So we've got three projects in the wings here.
Was that one of the frames that was sitting out there?
One of the frames out there was my son's Traveler, the white one.
Okay.
The other frame is a J1 1917 Standard, which competed with the Jenny as a primary trainer during World War I.
Huh.
A man named Eric Silk has three of those projects, and a number of those are slated to be built and or restored here in Spokane in the next 10 years.
Are there more restorations per pilot capita in this area than the rest of the country, do you think?
There's a lot. I can think of probably 12 active projects in eastern Washington and North Idaho.
And who knows who has another Wright Flyer in their backyard or something?
Who knows, yeah. There's some pretty unique things coming down the pike here in the next few years.
Okay, really quickly here, how do you guys fly those biplane formations? Do you practice those a lot? Does ATC like to work with you on that?
They do. ATC treats a formation flight as a single aircraft, so it's actually easier for them to deal with a flight of 10 than 10 individual aircraft. Once you're cleared for a landing, it's our responsibility to do so. Those formation flights are broken up of elements of two aircraft, so you have a lead and a wing, and those two aircraft are working together intimately. So each pilot is only responsible for one airplane.
Do you all pick a target speed beforehand and pretty much go over what you're going to do?
Yeah, what we did on Saturday, we did a 10-ship. We actually briefed that in detail, actually made a chalk runway, and we flew the airplane by walking it in Jeff Hamilton's hangar before the flight. So we choreographed the whole thing with emergency scenarios and such to pull that off. It's very rewarding to do those kinds of things.
But like you said, most of it's at low pass altitudes where the air is usually kind of mixed up, especially in the summer.
Well, it is. Yeah, the best time to do that's about sunset.
Yeah.
We flew that flight last weekend at 4 o'clock, which the air was not very nice.
Okay, and I guess wrapping it up here, where can people get more information on future biplane events?
Well, either the Antique Airplane Association, AAA, EAA, or Stearman Restorers has a website as well, the Stearman Restorer Association. And all of these events are typically listed on those webpages. So the Antique Airplane Association, EAA, or Stearman Restorers Association, SRA.
And your company too, Pemberton & Sons Aviation?
That'd be great, yeah.
Pemberton & Sons.
Yeah, our website is simply PembertonAndSons.com.
Okay.
A-N-D.
Okay, and then one more for the tech corner tonight, okay? Tech spotlight. So there are rumors of 100LL being phased out, and the 97 NOLED research is already underway. This affects, as you know, mostly the larger radial engines. How much retrofitting would it take to make, like, an old B-24 safe to operate on the new fuel standards?
Well, those will operate on very low octane. All those engines are low compression. You know, all of our radials, including the 1340, will run on 87 octane.
Oh.
I think the 1820 and 1830 will as well.
So you don't think that that would be a big deal then?
I don't. They're designed to run at low octane.
So who's going to have the problem then? I may have misunderstood the article I was reading.
Well, I think you're going to have trouble with the high compression engines.
Okay.
That are super or turbocharged. The most challenging would be the high performance retractable. You know, the Bonanzas and Malibus and things like that might be a problem.
Huh. Okay, and what else comes to mind? Anything good? A favorite memory this year? Something to take home with you?
Favorite memory this year? I think my trip to San Diego was a highlight. I grew up there and took the Boeing down to San Diego and shared it with all my lifetime friends down there.
Ah, big homecoming. Lots of people down there?
Oh, we had, when we were in San Diego, we were overwhelmed with the interest there. Yep.
Well, thanks for sharing it with everybody. I mean, it's a beautiful machine. It really is.
Well, you're very kind. I like hot wings.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for your time today, too, on behalf of all the Washington pilots and enthusiasts of the Northwest.
Thank you for your interest.